This is the Good Music Station in Washington, WQQW 570 on your AM dial and at 103.5 on FM sets. At this time, it is our privilege to present the regular weekly commentary of Patrick Hayes, manager of the Hayes Concert Bureau. Mr. Hayes comes to you by a special transcription today and will introduce a guest, Mr. Anthony Lavero of the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. Their subject will be our musical president. Here is Mr. Hayes.
Good afternoon. On election night in 1944, radio listeners who tuned in to Kansas City, Missouri to hear from the late President Roosevelt's running mate thought there was a mix-up when only piano music came over the air. It was Mozart's Ninth Sonata. Then the announcer said he would introduce the piano player. He was Harry S. Truman, playing a favorite composition. A MusicWise newspaper correspondent was surprised. Here was a man waiting to be vice president, the returns were not yet decisive, and he was playing Mozart instead of biting his nails. Within a year, Mr. Truman became president of the United States, and the cause of good music took several leaps forward. In the White House was a man who enjoyed playing and listening to good music and had a real appreciation of its importance in the life of the nation. I recall early in the summer of 1946, when the National Symphony Orchestra was preparing for the opening of its Watergate season, an invitation was forwarded to the White House for the president and his family to attend on opening night. We were delighted to receive word in reply that the president would come, unless there were unexpected developments. It was June, and Mrs. Truman and Margaret were in Independence, Missouri, so it appeared that the president would enjoy a stag evening of good music at the Watergate. We asked the president, through one of his secretaries, if there were any certain work or piece of music the orchestra might play that would especially please him. The prompt request was for the Eine kleine Nachtmusik of Mozart. It was programmed and played, and it was arranged that a small score of the work be sent from the Library of Congress to the president should he wish to follow the music. I saw the president do this on one other occasion in Constitution Hall, when the score of the work being played had been sent to him in advance. It is never announced ahead of time that the president will attend such an event, so his coming was observed by only a few hundred of the crowd at the Watergate that evening. His car arrived at the top level of the Watergate steps and was parked on a special ramp over the sidewalk, giving him a clear view of the stage and the entire Watergate site. The president's visit was, of course, widely reported the next day, as it always is, also in connection with his frequent visits to Constitution Hall. Mr. Truman's concert going establishes him as a music lover, and this gives us all much pleasure. How much of a musician is the president? How much musical background does he have? Is there more here than the ability to perform a few pieces on the piano, which might have been learned by ear? There is, indeed. The facts are brought out in a fine story published last Sunday in the magazine section of the New York Times, written by Anthony Lavero, who covers the White House for the Times. Mr. Lavero is my guest here in the studio today, and presently we'll hear from him about the background of the story itself. In it, Mr. Lavero describes the early days of Mr. Truman's study of music, his concert going, his likes and dislikes of certain types of music. Note that there are dislikes in Mr. Truman's musical book. He is a discriminating listener and draws the line at many works or types of compositions, as we all do. I'm especially delighted at one point in Mr. Lavera's article, which I would like to read to you. An habitué of Washington's Constitution Hall, Mr. Truman usually goes backstage and poses for news photographs with visiting artists, feeling that this helps musicians and the cause of music. I have always felt this keenly, how much it means to good music to have a musical president in the White House. If our president were a former baseball player, it would mean a lot to baseball everywhere, especially on the sandlots of the nation. If our president were an outstanding hunter and fisherman, sportsmen everywhere would take heart. Far more than baseball and other sports, the cause of good music in the nation needs a good boost, and it is heartening in the extreme to discover this awareness in the mind of the elected leader of all the people. Of an evening in Constitution Hall when the first family attends, the president and his party usually arrive about 8:20 p.m. and are ushered into the DAR reception room in the northeast corner of the building. They usually receive the artist of the evening, who comes from his dressing room across the backstage corridor into the reception room from a door on the stage side of this room. The ensuing visit is always brief. It is only a matter of minutes until the concert is to begin. The entrance of the artist and the entrance of the president and his party to Box 13 are always carefully timed, so there'll be no delay in the start of the concert once the president is seated. I know of no hitches in the usual routine over these several years, except the famous instance when Jose Iturbe was 10 minutes late and kept the president waiting, but in the reception room, not in Box 13. Solo pianists are notorious for coming into the auditorium at the last minute, Mr. Rubenstein usually arrives 2 or 3 minutes before he's due to walk onto the stage. And Mr. Iturbe shaved it a little too close that time. And now it is my pleasure to introduce the gentleman who knows more about the musical side of President Truman than anyone outside his personal family, Mr. Anthony Levero, newspaper man who covers the White House for the New York Times. Mr. Levero, welcome to radio station WQQW and this good music microphone.
How do you do, Mr. Hayes and ladies and gentlemen?
From the remarks you've just heard me make in my commentary today, Mr. Levero, you know that I found your article deeply interesting. How did you come to write it? What was the original inspiration?
Well, several weeks ago, Howard Taubman, the music editor of the New York Times, sent some questions down here about the president's musical interests, and he wanted some answers on them. They were rather fragmentary, but working from them, I realized the whole field of the president's music was unexplored. We knew a great deal about his mastery of politics, but we certainly didn't know much about his music.
Well, I'm delighted you were able to get started and dig in and get such a thoroughly fine story. Let me ask this. Have you ever been present yourself at any of the personal musical moments you describe in the story? In particular, were you at the press club that night when Mr. Truman and his daughter Margaret played four hands at the piano?
Yes, I was there. Members of the press club who had daughters qualified to attend. I took my little daughter. She's just about five then. Some of the members carried in their daughters.
You mean infants in arms?
Infants in arms. And the president was there with Margaret, and he obviously enjoyed the whole proceeding. And finally got up and led Margaret to the piano, and they played the Jenny Lind polka. I heard him do it four hands more recently with his sister, Miss Mary Jane Truman of Grandview, Missouri. We were at the commencement at the University of Missouri a couple of weeks ago, and he had lunch at the home of Dr. Middlebush, the president of the university. And he played from the two major pieces I mentioned in my story, the Mozart Sonata and the Paderewski Minuet. When he got through, I boldly went up to him. I suspected that if he could play four hands with Margaret, he might do the same with his sister. And I asked him, I said, Mr. President, how about a four-hand piece with your sister? And sure enough, he sat down and played the Jenny Lind polka. She fumbled it in the middle, and he poked her in the arm, and she said she'd forgotten it, and they started over again and finished it up very well.
Well, that's a delightful personal and family story. Coming back to your story in last Sunday's Times, Mr. Libero, did you have any difficulty getting the information? As I just said, your story is well-detailed and comprehensive. What were your sources?
Oh, I didn't have much difficulty. It was a matter of following leads, getting clues. I can't discuss some of my sources, but I got small clues that led to big parts of the story. For instance, the story of Truman playing in the smoke-filled room on election night 1944 came from my colleague, Jay Waltz of the New York Times. And then he recalled that there's a man, Mr. Leonard B. Zeisler, living in Washington, and he'd seen Mr. Zeisler at concerts here very often, and he thought perhaps he might be related to Mrs. Fanny Bloomfield Zeisler, who has described my story as the woman pianist that Truman thought was the greatest in her time. Well, I called Mr. Zeisler's home and got a sister, and she sure enough said that Mr. Zeisler was the son of Mrs. Bloomfield Zeisler. She kindly volunteered to try and get me some information and wrote to a brother-in-law in Chicago who had some family scrapbooks. And he told of the concert that that his mother gave in Kansas City on April 6th, 1902.
Yes, I see it here in your story,
1902. And he sent me a review of that concert from the Kansas City Journal. Well, I follow that up. He also said that Mrs. Bloomfield Zeisler had appeared there on February 2nd, 1898. Well, not only established that the president had been at the concert in 1902, but that he had been at the previous one, which tells us something, and that is that the president was going to concerts of this kind at the age of 14.
That's a point I'm delighted you brought out, that music in the life of our president is no recent matter. It's been with him since he was a boy. I'm impressed with the point you make here, by the way, where you say that religious and sentimental influences absorbed in the Midwest farm family of the 1880s were important elements in his background. You point out that his mother and father were great singers of church hymns, and that John Anderson Truman, his father, bought a piano for his youngsters just as soon as he could afford it. So there's a case where good music was a part of the family life, and it's always been with Mr. Truman since those days. A question, Mr. Levero. Have you had any reaction from the White House to your story, which was published last Sunday, during this last week?
Well, I've been told the president was highly pleased with it. And a member of his staff called me Monday morning and said he thought the story had made a definite contribution to the literature on the president, at least his biographical literature, since... we'd had only fragmentary pieces about his playing Chopin in the newspapers. We discover now, through this research, that his real favorite among the great musicians is Mozart.
You bring that out very clearly here. You also mentioned that Bach, Beethoven, Mendelssohn, and Liszt are others whom he ranks high. And an interesting sentence here of yours is, under the tutelage of Mrs. White, he mastered Mozart's Ninth Sonata. There again, we might begin to call that the Election Sonata.
Yeah.
And he still played two movements of it. And Paderewski, you mentioned the minuet a while ago, was one of his current favorites.
Those are the two major pieces in his repertoire. And as you see in the story, he played them at the Potsdam Conference for Churchill and Stalin.
We've talked a great deal in this microphone, Mr. Levero, about opera, especially about the fact that we don't have an opera house in Washington, but it now seems that even if we had one, it wouldn't make Mr. Truman very happy. You say here, he has almost the tired businessman's attitude toward it. In fact, you quote the president when he says, "I don't think there's an opera I'd sit through. The whole thing is usually a bore, but all operas have beautiful songs that are worthwhile. I haven't met anyone who would rather go to the opera than to Gilbert and Sullivan."
That is so, but knowing Mr. Truman and how agreeable and accommodating he is, I'm sure Mrs. Truman or Margaret could persuade him to go to an opera, especially since he would find something in any opera that he would enjoy a great deal.
That's about all we have time for, Mr. Levero. I want to thank you on behalf of our listeners for coming, and I congratulate you again on a superb story on a fascinating subject. On behalf of good music and all those who enjoy it and have a stake in it, I express gratitude and appreciation to our president for his example in giving prominence to music in his own life and leadership in the cause of good music in America. We might hope that during his time in office, the interest in good music will continue to increase to such an extent that the demand, which is already abroad in the land to a marked degree, for recognition on high government level of the fine arts and music would crystallize in the formation of an agency or department of music. It seems inevitable that music and the fine arts will have a place at the cabinet table at some time in our history as we move forward rapidly in our development as a cultured nation. What a contribution it would be if President Truman could be the founder of such an office or department. This is Patrick Hayes, speaking of music, returning you now to your announcer.
By special transcription, you've heard Patrick Hayes, manager of the Hayes Concert Bureau, in another of his weekly commentaries over the good music station in Washington, WQKW and WQKW-FM. Mr. Hayes' guest was Anthony Levero of the Washington Bureau of the New York Times. Next Sunday, Mr. Hayes will again appear at this time, and his subject will be an explanation of why Toscanini outpulls Jack Benny at the box office.